There are those who dedicate themselves to a sense of honor, to a life of courage, and a commitment to something greater than themselves. They have always defended this nation and each other. They still do. The few, the proud, the Marines.
Newsmakers on the Federal Drive with Tom Tamman and Amy Morris.
Patrick Donahoe is Postmaster General of the United States.
Retiree health care benefit money that we have to prepay. If that goes away, we know that between revenue generation and continued efficiency and cost reductions, we can make up the difference and be in the black this year. The loss of first-class volume puts a lot of additional cost pressure. We eventually will have to go from 6 to 5 days from a delivery standpoint in order to remain in the black.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive.
This is a paid commercial program and may not represent the views of Bonneville International Corporation or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions from this broadcast are solely those of the individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, the federal leader in retirement planning seminars. Join NITP this morning for an hour of plain talk on planning your future. You've got questions, they've got answers.
Good morning and welcome to For Your Benefit. We're here this morning to talk about, okay, so you're soon to retire. To move or not to move, that will be the discussion. And to lead us in it, and to certainly lead us in it, is Dr. Michael Creedon. He's got all these great things after his name. Professor of gerontology for 26 years, A.T. Still University in Missouri and Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
And he was the chairperson of the Aging Studies at Johns Hopkins?
It was a certificate program in aging studies. Very good.
See, I age very quickly after you tell me things.
Yes.
And the memory lapses. And his lovely wife, Lorna, is here, but she don't want to talk. But she just might. Anyway, good morning to both of you.
Thank you.
John Elliott will be joining us in a few. And my name is Bob Lines. I'm an accountant type, and I'm going to listen very intently to Michael, because as cold as it's been, I want to move. So should I move for warm weather or guide me?
To move or not to move, huh? Actually, when you look at the breakdown of Americans, it's been something in the order of 10% of retirees move out of state. And about something in the order of 40% move in state. And then 50% go nowhere. 50% stay right where they are in their own homes. That's been the breakdown fairly recently. But I suspect that even as we speak, that the numbers are shifting, that in fact, the number of people who are going nowhere is going up because, you know, housing values around the country are, as you know, not doing so well in lots of parts of the country. So how do you sell your house? And, you know, and buy someplace in Florida or somewhere, you got to sell your own house.
Okay.
And some parts of the country, that's easier said than done right now.
Hey, so, let me ask you, you know, my thinking in terms of finances. Do you find that there's a certain segment of the people that do move because they move from high-cost areas, maybe like we have here or on the West Coast around L.A. or wherever on the West Coast, for financial reasons, maybe first, and second, they we're going to go on the pecking order there. But do you find that there's a financial push to get people out of the high-cost areas?
Well, yeah. I mean, our little home in Vienna, Virginia, is about $5,000 a year in taxes. If you moved out to, say, the Valley of Virginia, you'll be paying something in the order of maybe $2,500 a year. So there's $2,000 or $3,000 a year. You're putting it right there in that one little area of savings. And, of course, like Fairfax County is probably one of the most expensive places in the entire country to live. So you move out of that high-expense county to, say, Front Royal, Virginia, or Winchester, Virginia, or some of these other smaller towns, more rural areas, you could save significantly, I think.
You know, I have a very good friend that moved to a warmer climate, but a little further outside of a larger metropolitan area. Certainly the cost of living was there and the weather was much more attractive, but they were a little too far from any cultural center. And what do you go shopping first before you move?
Well, I think if you're interested in moving, if you've kind of got a strong desire to move, and you and your spouse both have a strong desire to move, my whole theory is you should go nowhere in the first year, because retirement itself is a significant stress. And it's a big time change in your life. And I think, you know, if you're in charge, then one stress at a time is a lot better strategy. So I tell people, don't move the first year. But, you know, you might have a mother that you got to take care of who's got, something like Alzheimer's or something. Well, you might want to move the first year. But in general, I think people should go nowhere the first year. And at the end of year one, if you really think you want to move, I say to people, rent your house out for a year and rent where you think you might want to be for a year. And you test it for a full year and then you choose between them. Because I see lots of people in the Washington area who move away, sell the house, move away immediately. And, 6 months later, they're saying, they've got hurricanes around here. Think they would have thought about that first up, but they didn't. And so I think people ought to test it out for a full year and then make a choice. Yeah, so I'm for people renting out their house and renting where they want to be and then testing it all out for a year and then choosing.
There's an attribute given to some folks that do that around here and the colder climes, and they move to Florida or they move to someplace warmer, and they don't like that, but they call them halfbacks because they move halfway back from where they came from. Well, and they're finding the Carolinas now very attractive.
Well, that's true. About 10% of those who move to Florida and places like Florida move back north later on in their retirement. So, maybe when they're starting to get a bit frailer, maybe when the spouse dies, passes on, and they're alone, being near the family and the kids, it becomes more appealing. And so about 10% of retirees who, make major moves like that at 60, 65, move back north again at maybe 80, 85. And it makes a good deal of sense to be near family when you're starting to get a bit more frail.
And if there are any children, there's probably not a lot of children at that stage of the game, but the schooling. I mean, how do you know what quadrant of the city has the schools that you want your kids in?
Well, by the time you retire, hopefully you've done your education and at least in the primary levels and so forth. But, a lot of people, the retirement decision is hooked around when are the kids finishing college. And, that's a high expense item. And so lots of people want to get that job, that chore finished before they think about retiring because they need the extra money to pay for these college tuitions and things like that. Nowadays, I think what's actually probably happening is because of the economy and stuff, people are graduating from college and they're saying to their parents, maybe the best thing for me to improve my skills is to get a master's degree. And will you put up the money for my master's degree? And I imagine that conversation is being held in many, many homes around America this year. So are you willing, are you capable of helping me with my master's degree, my law degree, my therapist certification program, And so I do think that the economy is having a big impact on the parental function in terms of kids moving back in because it's cheaper to live with mom and dad when you don't have a full-time job. Yeah. And so I think that there are kids moving back in. I think there are kids hitting the parents up for more money for education, for another stage of education. There are lots of dynamics going on like that right now.
When I talk about selling residences in class from a tax perspective, I say, well, they have this really nice law that unless you made an awful lot of money on the sale of your house, there's no tax on it. But the house being sold shouldn't be just for tax reasons. It's because it's too much maintenance and it's bigger now because the folks moved out. Then I suggest that they buy a smaller house for two reasons. One, in theory, they can buy it for less money. And two, there's less room for those that used to live in the house not to live in the new house.
I had a guy in one of my classes one day, and he said to me on a break, he said, I have a beautiful house for retirement. He said, but they've moved back in. And he said, I can't get rid of them. And he said, I think the only way I'll be able to get rid of them is if I sell the house. And I mean, he was quite serious about the fact that he loved his house, but he had children who were finding it a lot cheaper to live with him than to live by themselves and pay monthly, rentals.
Yeah.
And so he couldn't move them out. And yeah. So those challenges are there, too.
And sometimes it's the reverse, too. If parents, fortunately, live a long time, sometimes the parents move back into the house after the kids move out.
Oof. Well, actually, the issue I bump into with retirees is, mom and dad getting frailer and whether mom will move into the house with them. And I'm not really crazy about moving older parents back into your house, because I think where the conflict happens is in the kitchen. Mother starts wanting to have a little turf in the kitchen, and it's your kitchen, and these little difficulties happen. And I think privacy is an extremely important variable here. And if you can set it up so they have a separate entrance and have their own apartment, sort of, where they can have a bit of privacy and you can have privacy, then I've no objection to it at all. And actually, eco housing might be a very good solution for people where there's a parent who is moving back to be near them and they want their parent, be able to help their parent.
Hmm. What if you have a couple and one of the couples wants to move to point A and the other one wants to move to point B, or a single person, how do they shop? Let's do the couple first, because that probably is the tougher one. How does one convince the other one? What kind of deals do they make, or do they move midway between the two points?
Well, I think that the snowbirds, all these folks from Minnesota who have a place down in Texas, and they go down there for several months of the year, and they're back up in Minnesota in their old home area for the summertime and the spring and the summer. And we have actually millions of snowbirds in America, people who have two locations. And, they have a place for the winter months and they have another place in the summertime. And it works for lots of people. So I have no objection to people, having a little pad in Florida or a little pad in South Carolina that they go to for the winter. And then come back up to the joy of Connecticut for the spring, summer, and early fall, and that sort of thing is working for an awful lot of people, where they split the difference, as it were. So, if you get people where one of them wants to be near the kids very badly, and the other one particularly interested in that, that's a different kind of a challenge. And, it's a question of, trying to work out in the next new phase of relationship where, you're both with each other a lot more than you used to be, because the job is no longer part of the equation. You're going to be spending a lot of time together. You better be someplace where you both have some interests and where you both can get involved, and maybe one of them likes to be with the kids, but the other one might like to be involved with the local Knights of Columbus or something.
Yeah, about splitting times too. I'm going to veer it off a little bit on a tax viewpoint. if one of the two locations is tax sensitive because it has a lower tax, in order to be considered a resident, generally speaking, you have to stay there more than 6 months a year and meet some other requirements. So those people that might share residence should look at that too, because the tax favored state certainly would want to be their principal residence, and the other one would want to be a second residence. Right, John?
Yes, I've been listening to the show.
Okay.
As I was stuck in traffic, and I won't tell you why, but it was...
It's D.C.
While you listened to the show, or while you were stuck in traffic?
No, this was on the Beltway in Virginia.
All righty, Michael, I'm sorry working? I veered it off for the tax perspective, but I'm going, oddly enough, I'm going through an audit right now for that. There's a state that's very high tax state, and the person doesn't live there, but the high tax state is trying to make them a resident.
Yeah, I see your point.
Yeah.
Actually, of course, there are, is it nine states, John, that that have no state income tax on federal retirees?
Well, there's a lot of them that don't. Well, I don't know if it's nine. Bob probably has.
Well, see, there's some that don't have any.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Florida, Texas, Washington State, Nevada. Come on, Bob. Tennessee, to a degree. It's got a very small dividends and interest tax. And then there's states that don't tax annuities. North Carolina, generally speaking, but not always. New York. Yeah. Pennsylvania. Now, I don't think you...
Massachusetts.
And Massachusetts. Now, these are not exactly tax havens. So
no,
Massachusetts,
no.
New York, and Pennsylvania are not, depending on where you are in Pennsylvania. But the real estate taxes in some counties, they're pretty stiff. But other than that, it's the taxes aren't bad. Cost of living maybe isn't the lowest that it could be. And there's some other states that don't come to mind. But I could look at my book and tell you what they are. So that, you know, for that, I think that ought to be probably in the top five or six, but it should never be number one. You know, people say, I'm moving here because they don't tax me. And I go, yeah, but.
Well, but they don't tax you. But then on the other hand, you start getting frail and you discover that there isn't any senior center around the place either. And you discover that transportation for the elderly is sparse, if available at all. And so you really have to look at the business of taxation in relation to services as well. And one of the things I like about Pennsylvania is that the state lottery, the entire state lottery is dedicated to services for the elderly. Well, that's millions of dollars, you know, that goes directly into services for the elderly. And, you know, you're getting older, not younger. So states, you need to look at states not just as a matter of whether they have low taxes or high taxes, but, you know, what do they provide for people with the taxes they have.
Right.
I think that's an important criterion for people to think about.
Now, when somebody does is, of course, you know it all. So how could you impart some of this wisdom to our listeners to say, okay, listen, you're going to move. Here's your homework assignment. Not in necessarily order of 1, 2, 3, 4, but what comes to mind, the top five, let's say.
Well, you know, it's I have a list.
You do?
I do. I have a list. And my list is 10 criteria on where to live in retirement. And the first one is number one criterion in my hit parade is you've got to be within 30 minutes of good health care. It just is so obvious, but people don't use that as an important criterion because they're 60 and they're out there playing golf every day and they don't even think about the possibility that they might get themselves severe arthritis. Or they might get glaucoma, or they might get this, you know, hearing loss, and they mightn't be able to get to the doctor that easily. So I think good health care, 30 minutes max.
Mm-hmm. My number one is traffic after this morning.
Well,
but go ahead.
That was very good.
Well, thank you. That's not a bad one either. And my number two is security. Because I've bumped into many, many 75-year-olds. And when you start talking to 75-year-olds about housing and things like that, you start finding out fairly rapidly that security is a really high issue for these people. I keep saying to people, you got to call the cops wherever you're thinking of moving, and you got to ask them, how many break-ins have occurred around here in the last few years? And, you know, how many old people have been ripped off or robbed or bopped around here in the last few years? So those are two kind of important things for people 75, 85, you know, to be reassured about when they're thinking of a place to retire to.
You bring up something. I'm somewhat of a gypsy, and years ago we were moving, and I was very anxious to get to this. It wasn't far from where we were, and I said to my wife, I said, you know, I think they have some crime issues there. And she said, but there's this thing you can go to and look. And where we lived was worse than where I was looking at. And where I lived, I didn't see it, but, you know, just exactly like you say. And it was a stat, and that was a while ago. I think the stats are a whole lot easier to come by.
You can look at the zip codes, and through a computer, you can find a lot of the information about this kind of stuff through zip code analysis. So that's another way to get it. But I say pick up the phone and call the police or you're thinking of moving and ask them. And I think that security issue is important. The third issue for me is economic opportunity. Because in fact, nowadays, something like at least 50% of older people want work of some kind. Now, when you start breaking down work and retirement, something like 50% of retirees want part-time, part-year, flexibly scheduled type stuff. And about something in the order of 10% of retirees want full-time work. Among federal retirees, the statistic I've seen is 2% want full-time work.
Could that have something to do with their pension?
It has a lot to do with their pension. When you're looking at part, and then about 10% more of retirees are into a micro business of some kind, you know, eBay or whatever. And so when you start breaking it all down, there's something like 60-70% of retirees nowadays have some interest in economic involvement of some kind, you know, whether it's a part-time job or whether it's a little micro business or whether it's a full-time job for a period of time. So I think economic opportunity is a really important piece that you got to look at when you're choosing a place to live. That because the percentage of retirees now who really want to make a buck somewhere or other is becoming a lot bigger. And so I put that fairly high in my list of criteria. The next one I have is public transport. Because one third of us will never drive again after 75. I did a book with a few colleagues some years ago for the U.S. Department of Transportation on driving reduction and driving cessation among elders. And that was one of the things that came out in this study that we did for the book, was that about one third of people over 75 never drive anymore. And you go to some nice retirement community out there on the Outer Banks or something, and you can't drive anymore, well, you know, you're kind of stuck as to where you can go. And if there is no public transport, it's a little bit more expensive to go places. And the reality is that, people get arthritis and people get glaucoma and people get hearing loss and people get strokes. And, you know, one third of us stop driving. And Americans think we have a divine right to four wheels.
Don't we?
Into eternity. And unfortunately,
especially the males.
Yeah.
Yes.
As part of that book, you know, I ran a series of focus groups in the Mid-Atlantic with men who had to give up driving. And I would always start with, how has it been for you in the last few years since you gave up driving? And every single focus group, swear to God, every single focus group, within 2 minutes, at least two of them were crying. It is extremely hard on American males to be without wheels.
Oh, yeah.
And you don't think these thoughts at 60. You know, you don't think
this. I hadn't thought of it till this morning. You've ruined my day.
All I'm saying is you need backup, you know, resources. And one is reasonable access to good public transport. And so I think that's up there on my list. And then I want people like myself. They don't have to have the same Irish accent I have, you know. But but people that I could enjoy being around.
We all wish we could cultivate one. Yes. I'll tell you that.
You're from Ireland?
Yeah, County Cork.
County Cork, okay.
You folks out there didn't recognize
you must have
this.
Moved to get here.
I had to come over here 40-some years ago. Still go back regularly to polish it up. But the truth is, you know, you don't need a huge number of people to be happy in a retirement location. You need a few people. You need just three or four people that you could hang around with and, you know, have a dinner with or play cards with or play golf with or whatever. You only need a few people. And I say join. You're bound to meet a few people you like. Whether it's the local Baptist church or whether it's the VFW or whatever, join a few organizations and you'll meet a few people. And then you can dump the organizations you don't want once you've met a few people you like. So I think that's a really important criterion is, are there people there like you? You know, it doesn't have to be a huge number of them, but you have to have a few.
I feel like the RCA dog here listening to you. Because I'm not that close to 75, but I'm not that far away. And I'm going, oh, my goodness. And your other ideas about joining the clubs, it's kind of like join this one, join that one, see which one you like, and let the other ones go.
Well, it's not so much picking the organizations. It's how do you find people? It's how do you find people you like? And the easiest way to find people, you go to the local pub maybe. But, you know,
there you go. That's my scheme.
The issue is, how do you find a few people you like? And I say, join a few organizations, and that will get you in contact with people, and you'll find a few that you like.
We don't have local pubs in Virginia, pretty much, because you have bars and restaurants, but you don't have local pubs.
So
like
you go to Baltimore.
In my hometown, Chicago, on every corner there was a local pub, and people would gather there. And you know, just like in
County
Ireland.
Cork, yes.
And they were really busy yesterday, weren't they?
I suppose they were, yes, drowning their sorrows.
Well, prior to, they were.
Yeah.
Now, John, you retired how many years ago?
Let's see. It's over 10. It's 10 and a half. It'll be 11 in June. No, that's wrong. I retired in 2002. It'll be 9 in June.
Okay.
8.
And you're you're an active guy.
Not really. I like to lie around a lot.
But you go to ball games.
I do go to ball games.
And you'd speak. You do, travel.
You're here with us right now. You're here.
Right. Yeah. Yes. I like to drive, except for today.
Did you give it any forethought as to what you were going to do?
Yeah, I pretty much knew I was going to do retirement seminars, which I've been doing most of that 8 years, and and that's radio show, and then answering emails from people with benefits questions and so forth. So I knew before I retired I was gonna at least do retirement seminars. I didn't know about the radio or the emails, but I did know I was gonna be in the speaking business.
But how many hours a week, John, do you think you put into the speaking business?
Not very many. That's very, very part-time. Not very many at all. And part of it, it's like today, is getting there.
Yes.
You know, once I'm there, I'm fine. I'm happy to do it.
Yeah.
But I'm not happy getting there.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's getting on a plane or getting in a car in this, we now have the worst traffic in the country. We just have been reading. If you could somehow magically, like in Star Trek, you know, just materialize at your sight, that would be great. Then that would be terrific.
Would you like getting out of the house and you like doing some of these programs?
Yeah, I mean, I like getting out of the house. I like going to Wegmans to shop and things like that, too. I mean, yeah. But I don't mind being in the house either.
Uh-huh.
You know, that's just fine, too, because I can read and
you've got things to do that you like.
Yeah, yeah. So I don't mind being in the house.
Okay.
I don't mind being lazy.
On your top 10 list, what do you do with workaholics?
Workaholics.
Mm-hmm.
The problem with workaholics is that huge numbers of them have never invested in anything else. And the Little League, for example, would be unimportant it doesn't compare with the job as in terms of the cosmic order of things. And, you know, local church or synagogue, well, that's not as important as the job either. And so they invest in nothing else besides the job. And when the job is gone, they kind of flounder because they have nothing else going on. And I had a guy at the World Bank one day came up to me and he said, you know, he said, I work 60, 70 hour weeks. He said, I always have.
That's it?
And he said, I don't know what I would do with 50 hours a week for me. Because he said, I've never had that kind of time in my life. And I looked at him and I said, to tell you what, I said, I want you to take 5 hours a week away from the bank. And I want you to put that 5 hours into something that has absolutely nothing to do with the bank. And I said, by the time you retire, you might have found out that there is more to you than banker, and that there is in fact more to the world than the World Bank. And I said, if you don't invest in some other involvements, activities, interests, you hit retirement. And I said, you know, within a month, you know, I said, you'll be looking to rush right back to a full-time job because you'll have nothing going on and you'll be bored stiff and you won't know what to do with yourself.
Do you know what he did?
Unfortunately, he went out of my life after that encounter. So I didn't follow up with him.
Well, I heard tell of a federal employee who retired and loved to play golf.
Yeah.
So he was playing golf Monday through Friday.
Yeah.
But he finally, as much as he loved golf, he got bored with it and went back to work for the government full time.
Uh-huh.
So there's an anecdote for you.
Well, I have a brother who is a mad golfer, and I think that he would probably desire to spend 5 days a week on the golf course in retirement. And there are people who do. And they enjoy it. And they have a buddies system. You know, they meet their buddies at the golf course and they have lunch at the golf course. And a big part of their lifestyle is the interaction with the pals and the golf bit. And I have no problem with that. If, you know, it's kind of a recreational approach to the use of your life in retirement. I want people to get into education and I want people to get into volunteering and I want to get people, you know, thinking about a range of things to do with their lives.
You might not remember this, but years ago I asked you this question.
Oh.
I said, I need something to do. I would like to play basketball better. Do you think I could make it in the NBA? And you looked at me dead in the eye and you go, no way.
Well, the NBA would be a little bit high to aspire at, you know, at, when you're hitting 50, 60 and stuff. The NBA is gone, is done and gone.
So I gave up that dream. I guess I'll have to play the guitar now.
Well, take my wife.
Henny Youngman?
This is apropos, or I wouldn't have raised the specter of her. At any rate, she retired in March. Yeah. But she'd been almost a year in retirement. And she is now finally getting to the point where she's getting a little bored and is thinking about volunteer work.
Uh-huh.
And maybe something in the public schools or teaching, not as a certified teacher, she'd have to go, although she did have a teacher certificate right out of college years ago, but I don't know. But at any rate, you begin to want to do at least something. And, of course,
get out of the house and do something with your life.
When you're not looking for pay, there's a big market for you. So there's a wide variety of things. I've thought about going back and resuming coaching Little League when I did when my son was in Little League, and he's, of course, well beyond that now. But, you know, so there are things to do.
Sure,
and
very
valuable tasks that need to be performed.
So. I keep telling people, nobody needs to be bored. All you got to do is walk to the nearest grade school, because every grade school has children with no adult helping them with their homework. It's true. Mm-hmm. And I say the other thing I say to him is 40% of nursing home residents have zero visitors.
Really?
Yeah, 40%. Nobody shows up. And 50% of thereabouts have Alzheimer's, etc., you know. Mm-hmm. But 40% have nobody showing up. And all the research says visitors make a big difference to the quality of life. And it makes a big difference to how they treat you staff-wise. If people are showing up in your life and people are dropping in to see you, they treat you a little different.
How long does a volunteer stay with a person like that? An hour, 2 hours, half hour?
Depends on what you do. Bring a little dog along, and they absolutely adore little dogs, and they love playing with little dogs, and you can just, have a little chat, and, could bring a little baby. They absolutely adore small children. And so a little dog or a small child, that just get wrapped up, and you don't have to work too hard.
Wow. All right, let's get back to your top 10. I mean, this is a great segue. It really was, yeah.
Sorry.
So did we hit all the 10?
No, we haven't. Well, actually, the next several are all about retirement communities and things like that in terms of options and where to live. And I keep saying, because a lot of people think about retirement communities, and I have no problem at all with retirement communities as an option. But I keep saying to people, a CCRC, a continuing care retirement community, has assisted living and has geriatric care built in. So you're never thrown out. Because the ones with the golf courses, they sound like 60 years, and you're into golf, 60 years old, sounds great. But about 75 or 80, and you get yourself a stroke, or you get yourself some arthritic problems, and you can't play the golf anymore, and they say, we don't have any nurses here. Bye. Mm. And, I say to people, I don't want to be on the street at 85 trying to find housing. I'd rather pay the extra money for a continuing care retirement community, which has the assisted living and has the geriatric care, so I know I'll never be thrown out. And I know there'll be support systems for me the rest of the way. So that's one of my important criteria. I think in terms of if what you want is a retirement community, get yourself a continuing care retirement community. And I also say to people, non-profits are better. Because the staff stay longer at nonprofits. And, some of these retirement communities and nursing homes, etc., have like 100% turnover rates of staff. So you really have to look, stability of staff is very important, I think, to people. And nonprofits, people stay longer working with them. And secondly, nonprofits are financially actually probably more stable. I mean, Ericsson went bankrupt this past winter. And Sunrise was in a lot of trouble this past winter, got through it, but it was in a lot of trouble. So I think, that nonprofits are more stable financially and the staff stay longer at nonprofits. So I'm in favor of nonprofits as a choice of place to live in retirement. And I think that one of the important questions you've got to ask about retirement communities and places like that is, can you get your money back if you decide this is not right for me? Because, there is $400,000, $500,000 to move into a lot of these retirement communities. And, you might get awful tired of ambulances every single night, wee. Or you might get, you might be tired of people dying around you. And you might not want that as a lifestyle after the first year or two. So if you want it out, can you get your money back? You better ask before you sign the contract. And you'd better have your lawyer review the contract before you sign. Because I really think that a lot of the contracts now have little things in them that you really need somebody to review the contract before you sign up. So those are important criteria to me in terms of retirement community living.
Michael, these things you're saying are just really pointed and good. Is there any way somebody could go on a website and look at your works or email you a question? Or?
Well, I've had questions emailed to me, and I've sent them my list.
Okay.
I've sent them.
And how would they email you?
mcreedon@cox.net.
How do you spell? Well, I won't ask you M. How about Creedon?
C-R-E-E-D-O-N. Michael Creedon is my name, and it's mcreedon@cox.net.
Thank you.
People ask me, I'll send them the little list.
Very good. I might email.
In fact, what I ought to do is give it to you, Bob, and so you send it to people.
Okay.
Or we could post it on our website.
Sure. And if...
NITPInc.com.
That's the website. And if you want to email us just general questions about what Michael's talking about or what John knows all about or Tammy knows all about benefits and I know a little bit about financing, what's our email address? Info...
I know mine.
No.
I mean, I know my mailbox. It's jelliott@nitpinc.com.
Okay.
You know, two L's and two T's.
I think it's an info
at Scottish ancestry. That's why it's the two T's.
Okay. And by the way, number 10 in my hit parade is, what about your own house? Because, in fact, I'd say it's at least 50% now are staying right in their own homes. And because of the economics of housing at the moment in America, I think that percentage is going up fairly strongly at the current time. And actually, a lot of people don't want to go anywhere. And I say to them, okay, you've got to do a home adaptation inventory. As soon as you retire or before you retire, you've got to adapt the house to your future. And if you adapt your house at retirement, you will eliminate one-third of all the falls and fractures.
Yeah, we have friends that actually put in an elevator in their home, and they don't need it yet, but anticipation of not being able to climb stairs, they put an actual elevator, not one of these things that goes up a band. I mean, an actual, you walk in, close the door.
Up you go.
Up you go, one floor.
Very handy for visitors.
I suppose so, yeah, but they anticipate that they want to stay in their home, and this is one way to do it.
Well, my own mother, as she got older in our home back in Ireland, we put some banisters on the stairs to help her with getting up the steps. But I remember we were just about at the point where we were going to adapt a room on the main floor of the house and put a bathroom on the main floor of the house for her when she died, when she got a stroke and died. But I remember her climbing those steps, and sometimes she had to get on her knees to get up some of those steps. And point I guess I'm getting at is that home adaptation is a very important thing, and actually a single-story dwelling is a lot better for you as you age. But you really need to get rid of shag rugs. You really need to get rid of knobs. The older you get, the more difficult knobs are to deal with, and faucets and things. And levers are so much better for old people in terms of doors and faucets and all that kind of stuff.
It's very interesting because in office buildings now, if there's a renovation done, they have to put the levered door handles rather than the round ones.
Yeah.
Could be fire, could be illness or whatever, but it's certainly easier to open one of those than it is the other.
Well, actually, I think if you're buying a house for your retirement, whether it's in Florida or any place else, I really think universal design is a very important criteria in buying a house, especially if it's a new house. Because, you know, a little bit wider doorways and things of that nature and less steps up into the house, you know, those things become extremely important for lots of people as they get older. Just the steps can become a real huge barrier to access or egress. And so, you know, it's just adapting to your future.
Wow.
And actually, AARP has very good information about home adaptation. And your area agency on aging, wherever you are in the country, there's an area agency on aging in your local county or your local city. And they have good information about home adaptation.
And would they also have information as to organizations that are in the area of a general variety and then a specific
variety? They have all
variety.
Kinds of information about volunteer opportunities. They'd have all kinds of information, educational and social recreational opportunities. They'd certainly have information about transportation issues and things like that too. I mean, the area agency has a full-time staff doing nothing but information and referral services, or telephone information services for people, and it's free.
Can they also help you with long-term care questions and Medicaid?
Yes, they can.
And Medicaid rules and issues?
Yes, they can.
Yeah, because that, of course, looms important.
Yeah.
Because most people, it seems to me, just polling my seminar classes, have no long-term care insurance. So if that continues for them, which it probably will for most, unfortunately, they'll run out of money. They could run out of money at some point paying for long-term care, and rather quickly because it's so expensive. And then the fallback is Medicaid.
Yep.
And so these area agings where councils can help you with those issues. Am I right?
Well, they certainly can steer you to the right places to find information and find service resources.
Yeah.
Whether it's adult daycare centers or senior centers or nutrition sites where you are Meals on Wheels programs, all those kinds of things, the area agency is a very good place to start the process of finding. By the way, in Virginia, we worked with the Fairfax County Long Term Care Council, worked very hard with an organization in Richmond to develop a website called seniornavigator.com, and they allow you to do questions, and they have a panel of 70 experts who will respond to your questions within a 24-48 hour period. And so seniornavigator.com has very good data information about services and resources in Virginia and Metro Washington area. And they also have a companion website called Disability Navigator, because we have a huge number of young adults now who are arriving into adulthood who normally, in the past, maybe might not have lived into adulthood with disabilities of various kinds. So we've got many more people living with disability in adulthood. And so Disability Navigator is a very useful companion resource.
Are there any stats to show that in recent years, let's say the last 10 years, more retirees are volunteering or wanting to work part-time than prior to? When I was growing up, you know, somebody retired and didn't do anything.
Well, actually, I met a woman at the Gerontological Society of America about a year back, and she was finishing a dissertation about the 55 to 65-year-old age group. She had done a nationwide survey of 55 to 65-year-old Americans. And I said to her, well, what's your data on volunteering? And she said, actually 42%, which is much higher than previous statistics, and suggests that there is a wave of people moving into retirement right now who are, in fact, more involved before they retire than past groups. And so one of the critical factors in involvement and volunteering in retirement is, have you volunteered before? And people who retire, who volunteered like with Little League or whatever, are much more likely to volunteer in retirement than people who haven't volunteered prior to retirement. So it's actually very good news. It suggests that we have a wave of people moving into retirement now with high proportions of volunteering experience. Just great news.
No, I think that's great news. And
yeah, it is good news.
And also for the workplace, not for the workaholics, but for the ones that would want to work part-time, they maybe don't need as much as they did while on the job. Maybe they need more. I don't know.
Well, you know, the part-timers, fine. The workaholics, they're the ones who actually need to get involved in other things before retirement so that they have things to go to. Because workaholics are people who like to do stuff. They're active. They're active people. They want to be involved in stuff, and so they got to get themselves interested in whether it's crafts or whether it's a volunteer thing or whether it's developing some new skill or something. I mean, just get themselves into something that interests them, and then the segue into retirement will be a lot easier, I think.
Yeah. Now, don't laugh at me when I tell you this, but. For the last, I don't know, 12, 15 years, I've adopted a road. And I feel it's almost a triple benefit. When I had a dog, that was one benefit. Second, I get exercise. I walk a little over 2 miles every morning, picking up the trash. And then I don't have to look at the trash when I drive home at night.
Yes, I've seen you in your orange jumpsuit.
Yes.
Well, I think that's a great idea.
Yeah.
It combines exercise and community service. And as you said, it's less pollution in your environment.
That's right. And when I throw the trash away, I throw it at a school, and I separate the plastic from the paper.
This is true, too.
Anyway.
And, you know, Lorna and I have talked about this business of retirement, where to live in retirement, and living, you know, about 50% of older adults want adult-only living environments. And about 50% want intergenerational living environments. This, and that's another important kind of criterion in terms of thinking about yourself and where to live in retirement, because there are lots of older people who just are much more happy living with adults only. And there are other folks, and I'm probably one of them, who like being around teenagers and like being around kids. And
well, nobody likes being around teenagers.
Well, I do.
But I for one, one of the nicest sounds is preteens, young children playing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just like, it makes me feel good to hear people, you know, like between 5 and 10 or something, you know.
Yeah.
Playing outside.
Yeah.
And fortunately in my neighborhood there are some, and I can hear them occasionally.
Well, that's grand.
Yeah.
If you'll go for it.
I love that sound.
Yeah. Well, then you like living in a regular community where you can hear the sounds of kids and the voices of kids.
That would be my preference, yes.
Yes.
I mean, I do have a brother in Dublin, as a teacher in Dublin, and he has a son who plays in a band. And what he did was he set up the garage detached from the house. So he insulated the garage so he could have his drums and his noise-making implements, and they could do their thing in the garage with a sealed-off
garage band.
A garage band.
When I turned 60, I always wanted to dance like MC Hammer. And I like music, and Nancy brought somebody in to teach all us geezers how to dance like MC Hammer. Of course, none of us could, but it was fun. And I would think being around activities like that rather than just being around people like me.
Well, the nice thing about dance, actually, I think dance classes and all that kind of stuff are terrific for retirement, because it's exercise, it's meeting other people, it's physical activity, the whole bit. And it's mental a challenge, too, because you're learning new dance steps and this and that. So I keep saying to people, dance class has multiple payoffs. And it's exercise, it's mental challenge, it's meeting people. It's got a whole lot of stuff to it that's terrific for retirement living.
Speaking about dancing, we have 1 minute to dance off the show. And well, with all this great news, I'm ready to go out and... I don't know who to dance like now, but Fred Astaire, you're right. Anyway, Michael, final comments?
Well, you know, I think that actually it's a good idea to go look at places that you might be interested in retiring to, and visiting them in different times of the year. Because, you know, people go, they go to the beach in the summer and they think, oh, this would be a great place to retire. And they go down there in the winter and there's nothing going on.
Okay.
So I say visit a number of times and visit different times of the year.
Thank you, Michael. And your website again, real fast.
mcreedon@cox.net is the best way to get me.
Great. John?
Well, the financial aspects of retirement are important, but so are the non-financial. So plan for that as well.
And plan to listen to us next week. Thanks for listening. Thanks for y'all coming in. Bye-bye.
Been listening to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP. Please tune in next Monday at 10 a.m. for a topic solely devoted to you, the federal employee. The show can also be heard 24/7 on federalnewsradio.com. Thanks for listening.
Why do I serve in the U.S. Navy?
For freedom.
Freedom of religion.
What America stands for.